I think we don't have a quorum yet, Bill, but today we're going to be having the overview of the, I guess, the agency that has been known as the Department of Finance and the Department of Employee Relations. It's currently referred to as Minnesota Management and Budget. And Commissioner, is Commissioner Hansen, you're on a tight schedule, so I guess you're going to be teeing it up and then handing it off, I guess. Welcome back to the Budget Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tom Hansen. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Management and Budget Department, and your introduction sounded a lot like the artist formerly known as Prince. So we're hoping to get our name rectified. We'll talk to you about that in a minute. We have a slide presentation. I believe that you all have a copy. And if you turn to page one, we have a multifaceted presentation for you today, in part giving you an overview of our agency, but also you had forwarded some areas of interest and questions. As we talk about each of these areas, we'll try to address the specific questions, Mr. Chair, that you had addressed to myself and my team. You see that Minnesota Management and Budget was established on June 1st of 2008. It is the combination of former Department of Finance, Department of Employee Relations, and that was part of the legislation that passed in 2007. And then this summer, we merged the Management Analysis Division from the Department of Administration into our new agency. We are technically by statute, and when we sell bonds, still the Department of Finance, but we went through an intense discussion in our agency over a period of time on what a name accurately reflected the intent of the legislature when they merged us, as well as the governor, and came up with the Minnesota Management and Budget Department. It brings together the work of finance and state government with personnel and labor, and it brings all of those enterprise-type issues together. And as we look forward in the challenges that are before us with declining revenues and an aging workforce for our state, not only in the private sector but certainly in the public sector, melding these issues in a more strategic department to serve the needs of Minnesotans makes a great deal of sense. If you turn to the second slide, our mission is to increase state government's capacity to manage and utilize financial, human information, and analytical resources to ensure exceptional service and value for Minnesota's citizens. Again, it's getting at that enterprise look at our resources that we need to carry out the functions of state government. And as we move forward in our presentation today, you will see that. You will also see that theme as we present our budget next week and when we return to this committee throughout this session. With that, I'll turn it over to our very capable Deputy Commissioner, Stephanie Andrews, who will take it from there. And as I can answer any questions right now, but I have to go do some more budget work.
All right. Any questions to the Commissioner before he takes off? Well, thank you, Commissioner, and we'll see you again after the budget is released.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Assistant Commissioner, welcome to the Budget Division.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Stephanie Andrews, Deputy Commissioner for Minnesota Management and Budget. As the Commissioner said, we have a broad list of questions that we want to make sure that we answer here, but we're trying to also put it in some context of what the agency does as a little bit of a preview for the upcoming budget discussion. So feel free to stop me, please, obviously, if you have questions along the way. But We want to, on slide four, first start out just by reminding you of the different parts of the agency now, a fairly broad scope with the merger of finance and employee relations and the addition of management analysis. It brings together from finance, the accounting services, financial reporting, statewide IT systems, economic analysis, budget, cash and debt management from finance, from the former doer, labor relations, human resource management, code of ethics, employee insurance, and then from management analysis, the consulting skills and technical assistance that they provide to a range of public sector clients. Important perhaps for you to know just in terms of the overall size of the combined agency, we're currently at around 270 FTE. That's a just for context sake, a decrease from 370 FTEs in the year 2000, so a decrease of about 28%. As things go, no decrease in responsibilities. I think we're encouraging ourselves also, as you are, to look very seriously at what we do and figure out how we can do it better. The merger provides us with some opportunities for some really fruitful conversations that we haven't always been able to have quite as easily, and so we've already, I think, seen quite a bit of benefit from having especially the budget and finance people together with the human resources side of the state government operations. We've tried to organize the information in this hearing today. I'm looking at slide 5 now to focus on the way that we utilize financial information, also looking again to that part of the mission statement that really talks about increasing state government's capacity. We're well aware of the fact that what we do really is to try to make sure that the rest of state government works better. In the end, if this department is functioning well, you should see that the other state agencies are able to have their operations running efficiently and effectively, that they're able to hire and recruit and retain the people that they need, and that the information systems that we run are, again, serving their needs best. And so we're very clear, again, that our mission really is to support them. Along the way there, providing exceptional services to employees, to our other stakeholders, is also really key to the department meeting its mission. And we also clearly develop and provide a range of enterprise analysis, again, much of it relating to the enterprise systems that we run. So we're going to start here by talking about some of the major information projects that we've been working on. You had some questions about the biennial budget system. We also want to give you a little bit of a preview to a transparency website that we've been working on that will make a range of information much more accessible to citizens and to all of you, and also the planning that we've been doing for a new accounting system. So we're going to start there with the financial information. I'm going to move on to slide 7, which is again, as I mentioned, a preview of our citizen transparency website. We're looking for a better name that's a little more catchy, but for now, that's where we're at. Let me introduce Jim Showalter, the State Budget Director.
Mr. Showalter, welcome to the Budget Division.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, State Budget Director and Assistant Commissioner at MMB. As Stephanie said, we are trying to constantly find ways to make the tremendous amounts of data that we have available more accessible, more understandable, more usable for decision making. The three different projects that we're going to be discussing really start from the relatively small, the transparency initiative, to the very, very large maps. We're getting in the formative stages right now, scrubbing some data, making sure we've got private data taken care of so that it's not released accidentally, that the website is very usable. But what we're about to do is provide a website for the public to have searchable information on vast portions of state spending. We hope to provide information on schools, how much is going to specific school districts, local units of government, contractors, anything that we call a vendor payment in our accounting jargon will be available on a fund basis, on an agency basis, all in a fairly easy, drillable manner. This will encompass about 80% of general fund spending. We would also
Oh, Senator Rush, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What about the costs of the state agencies themselves? Is that going to be? I think you maybe have seen a bill that I have that calls for a searchable database of state expenditures, but it would include not just payments, not just pass through payments to other entities, but also the operations of state government, so that without identifying your name, someone could go on and find out the salary or compensation package of someone in your position. Are you all going to take that step so that my bill would be unnecessary, or do I still need to have a discussion of that?
Mr. Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Senator, what we're about to roll up does not include employee-specific information. We do have a report, I think, that we will get to later that will provide that information.
It wouldn't be identified by name.
At least the initial rollout that we have is looking at agency expenses. So you would see, like, you know, if our department contracts with a vendor to help with IT services or other kinds of things, those operating costs would be included in here. However, compensation would not.
Reimbursed travel expenses, would they be in there? Or cell phone usage, or use of a fleet, things like that.
We have somebody else coming up here. Welcome to the Budget Division.
Mr. Chairman, members.
I didn't really mean to interrupt. I'm just curious.
Fair question.
This is the slide you're doing with
it. Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Lori Moe. I'm an Assistant Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. And the business expense reimbursement is a little more complex because some business travel is paid directly by agencies, and some of it is paid through the payroll system as a business expense reimbursement. So the payroll side of the expenditures will show up, but we won't have them tied to individuals. The things like cell phones and other expenditures made by agencies, those will be included.
Okay, it's a step.
Okay, Mr. Showalter?
I think this website will provide certainly a wealth more information than has been available on our website previously, and it also, I think, gives some interactivity to our data. We've already had, I think, some good data out on our web presence, but more often than not, they're PDFs. They're documents that are hard to work. Budget documents are one of those examples. This hopefully will give us a much better and more hopefully pleasing to the legislature approach to state information.
Okay, so we'll see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Showalter, will this database, will that include like state expenses through grants that are issued?
Yes. Mr. Chair, sure. Senator, yes, it will. If it's a good question, let me just take you through a couple examples on the next few pages. We're giving you a few screenshots just to show the kind of thing that we're building and the kind of information that's going to be there. We already have a citizens web page that we made live right around just before the November forecast. They provide some, I think, user citizen-friendly information, summary level information on what's going on for money, people, construction projects, basic kinds of questions that people have about state government. This would be an addition to that where you would find specifically some question of whether you want to find out payments to vendors or information on payments so basically to professional technical contracts. The word vendors, however, is much broader than you might be thinking. It's not vendors as in a salesperson or something like that. It is almost anybody doing business with the state. So to continue through on the next page, you'll see you have an opportunity to start sorting through. Do you want to have information by agency? Do you want to have information by fund, general fund versus federal funds versus other types of funds? Do you want to have information by types of category of expenditure? Operating expenses versus local aids and credits, all kinds of different types of objects of expenditure. Or finally, do you want to look for a specific vendor itself? As you keep on asking and refining your search, you go to the next page, you'll find different types of information. An example on page, I think it's 10 of your handout, shows you that you can have a category spend from highest to lowest amount. So if you look really carefully, you'll see the information on, very carefully in my case, I believe it's medical claims, is my guess is that's that first line.
Medical rehabilitation claims.
There you go. And continuing on down, so you can see how several billion dollars being spent on that first line, and then you can keep on drilling through that to see what kinds of activities, what kind of spending is going on there. The next page gives you another way of looking at it. You could say how much is human services spending? How is that money going out? And you can, again, start to query and do sorts through the various agencies. On the next page, you also see a look at the funds. The state government is a many-layered organization. We have federal funds. We have special revenue funds. We have enterprise funds. all distinctly set up for special purposes. While we talk about the general fund most of the time as being our budget, there's certainly a lot of other activity that's consciously set up by the legislature to do other types of things. This will help provide more information and easier access to that type of information as well. At the lowest level, the final slide, the final screenshot that you have, you'll get to literally what is the payment that was made by our accounting system to that organization, to that vendor in our wording. So if it's independent school district number 41, or whether it's Deloitte Consulting, or whether it's, I think in the example here, it's Xcel Energy, you can get to that level of saying, how much did we pay this vendor? I think it'll be useful for vendors as well as ourselves and the public generally. So no more questions on that. Then I'm going to go to a larger project and also, I think, important project for you to consider, which is the budget information system. Every 2 years, we present a biennial budget that is produced by the biennial budget system. It's a module that provides information in a very detailed level and presents it to you. That system was formed, created in the 80s with some updates in the 90s and is really at the end of its technical life. With some carry forward that we were able to continue because of legislation that the State Government Committee adopted, we've been able to use some of that carry forward to look at new ways to present that budget information and are working on that project right now. Catherine Hennessy has joined us and is our project manager and is here with us today. And the project is ongoing right now. We've already let out an RFP. We are working with our contractors and hope to have a system up and running by early summer. It's going to include a lot of different types of information, including historical and projected data management, salary projections. It's going to help reporting and information access, documents production as well. It doesn't take us all the way out of our legacy systems. We still have to deal with fiscal notes tracking. We still need to figure out how to deal with capital budgets. But we're hoping that the system that we're putting in place and the software that we've got will be usable and help us to take on those subsequent projects. The next page identifies some of the key stakeholder needs of the executive branch, the agencies, and the legislature. We've been working extensively with agencies to help understand and try to build in their expectations into this project. We've been consulting with legislative staff. I think we can say extensively, certainly we've been adamant about getting their input and understanding what kinds of information are necessary so that we've got a system and a set of information over time that's going to be flexible and be useful not only when we produce the biennial budget, but is going to be useful throughout the course of a budget biennium. The next page just gives you some of the implications for performance on information management. Our vision is that this system is available and usable all the way through for all 24 months out of a biennium. Our current system really is like a snapshot. It's like taking a big PDF of spending at one point in time and then managing and producing documents. It is not something that is live. It is not something that changes over time. You can actually find better information on what the governor proposed than what, in fact, has got enacted, because that budget system really is a presentation tool, not necessarily a projection of the upcoming biennium. We want better individual planning information from agencies. Compensation, other operating expenses are often done on side systems, spreadsheets. This will help us all work off of the same platform. And ultimately, this should help us with transparency. We're trying to not replicate the same information many, many different times in different ways, but we'll start to pull these things together and take advantage of the types of software that are available now. The last page here just gives you a screenshot, again, of the types of menus and the sophistication that will be available in this new system. It's anyone who has seen our current budget information system, the BBS that we work in the budget, will not recognize this screenshot because it's much, much different. That is a very significant project for us in data management and is, I think, a lead to some of the issues that we're going to deal with as we look ahead on overarching information and financial management information. We're going to have to work on standardization, understanding what kind of reporting we need on a consistent basis, and hopefully getting a better set of information across all state government so that it's not just a port snapshot of parts of state government and being largely blind to other parts. We want to be able to have a system that will incorporate lots of information on performance, on other financial information, so that the budget decisions can be based on as rich a database as possible. If there's, if there's no questions on that, then I will turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Lori Moe.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I'm going to jump in here. As we're talking about the budget system, one of the things that we looked at in our agency was looking at the budget project and looking at the MAPS, the statewide accounting and procurement system, recognizing that both were in need of upgrade, and trying to figure out what was the right sequencing so that we didn't have two full projects moving ahead at the same time, giving us challenges with staffing and decision making that we really couldn't find a way to work through. We knew that we needed to do one ahead of the other, in large part because one of the things that you're doing as we start talking about a new accounting system is looking at how it interfaces with that budget system. As Jim talked about, we take information from the accounting system that represents what agencies have been doing, what they've been spending, and we move it into the budget system and report on current spending for you, and also then use the budget system as a projection tool. And so those two systems really need to work closely together. We decided to go with the budget system first, in large part to help us get a team of people together that had some expertise in looking at some of those issues, as Jim talked about, standardization, reporting needs, to get some of those things under our belt and deal with them in a slightly smaller sense than the very large project coming at us with the accounting and procurement system. And so that's kind of how we looked at it in the sequencing. And now as we turn our attention to a replacement of the accounting and procurement system, I want to ask you to take a look here at we're up to slide 18. And basically as we try to remind you as we move ahead here, the MAP system is a partnership. It's a partnership between the Office of Enterprise Technology, the Department of Administration, who is largely responsible for the procurement side of state government, and then MMB, which is responsible for the payroll benefits and financing accounting side of it. As it says on slide 19, MAPS is the state's basic financial management system. It was first selected in 1992, first implemented then in 1995, last updated in any significant way in 1998 in anticipation of the Y2K project, and it's used by all branches of state government to do their business. 25 million transaction lines. This is basically the state's core infrastructure financial system. I'm going to turn it over now to Assistant Commissioner Moe to walk you through some of the specifics of the system.
Commissioner Moe?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. We have been in front of you before and talked about this project, so I'm not going to review all of the details in this next set of slides, but what I'll do instead is try to focus on an update on the activities that have happened since the last time we were before you discussing this project. But just as a reminder, as Ms. Andrews just said, this system is the core of our financial management infrastructure. It is the system that processes accounting and procurement transactions for all of those state agencies and manages the millions of transactions that occur every year throughout state government. We have talked to you about the risk assessments that we've done and about the risks facing the system, and we have continued to monitor those as we have since 2004, and we've been trying to reach the right balance of getting the the most value out of our current system that we can, while the risks are still manageable, but acting soon enough to have the system replaced so that we don't run into trouble before the two-year implementation period has passed. And we think we're now reaching the point where it's not any longer responsible to delay replacement. We have risks on the operating system side, on the desktop side, and on the staffing side. On slide 22, we may have showed you this before, but it's an error message that users see from time to time. They pop up seemingly randomly as they're trying to complete their work, and it's an example of both some of the problem and some of the inefficiencies in our current system. The system replacement that we're contemplating will bring significant benefits to the operation of state government. In addition to providing a stable technical infrastructure where we'll have ongoing vendor and staff support available and will stay compatible with other technology throughout the agencies, we also expect to have better information for decision making and for greater access to information for citizen transparency. We also expect through streamlined and standardized processes, e-procurement improvements, and a web-based system that the system will lead to greater efficiencies. On slide 24 are some examples of what other states have spent in doing similar projects. In some cases, we see in other states they're undergoing HR payroll replacement at the same time. That's not the case in Minnesota. Our semaphore system is stable and current and in very good condition. So what we are talking about is the accounting and procurement components of the statewide systems only. Last time we were before you, we talked about working on development of the RFP and the business case. Planning activities have continued since that date, and we have recently updated both the risk assessment and the request for proposal documents. Some of the changes related to technology changes since the original work was begun, and also to update the procurement documents for changes related to the budget system that you just heard Mr. Showalter discuss. We've now made the changes that are needed, and we are ready to publish the RFP and expect to do so in the near future.
Do we know what the cost of MAPS is going to be at this point?
Mr. Chair, the overall estimates for the project are at $70 million.
$70 million. But last year was, what, 54, is it? I can't remember what it was a year or two ago. I mean, when we didn't fund it, but the last time it was in, it was around 54, I thought. So, okay. So,
Mr. Chairman, yeah. I think that's right. I think that was 2 years ago, and okay. we updated some of the cost elements based on advice from a consultant that we had hired to assist us in that effort. Cost items related to state salaries were updated based on the contract settlements since the original numbers were compiled, et cetera.
So now, does the business information system that you described earlier and MAPS, do they tie into each other? Are these two just separate systems? I mean, it seems to me some of the concepts of a searchable database in one ought to be applicable to the other, but I don't know whether we're just operating in different realms here or whether they come together.
Mr. Chairman, they serve different functions, but they are very closely related, and they are interfaced together. So there are part of the construction of the new map system will include updating of some of those internal interfaces. In addition to an interface with the budget information system, we also maintain an interface with the information access data warehouse, and there's also a large interface with the Semaphore HR payroll system. And that's part of the reason for the size and complexity of this project, is that there are many interrelated pieces. In addition, there are a number of interfaces with systems out at state agencies, and that those will be updated as well.
You know, the governor met the other day with the Wisconsin governor and talking about some ways to, you know, share resources and become more efficient. I don't know whether, you know, either of these systems is something that's conducive to trying to work with a neighboring state on, or whether it's just unique to Minnesota. I got to imagine Wisconsin has some similar issues. Or is there anything we can learn or do with them that in any of this area?
Mr. Chair, we're having those conversations with them. We will start. We will have some specific conversations about that. They started down the path of an ERP system and have actually purchased some software, but have not gone forward with implementation. And so there's at a minimum certainly some things we can learn from the decisions they made, and we'll do that. In terms of closer, actually, integration of the systems, at our first glance, it doesn't appear that there's a lot of benefit from that, because the different way that the states run their systems, the funds they have, the accounts they need, the reporting requirements that all of you are looking for are different. Mm-hmm. And so we're certainly having those conversations. It looks to be more of an information sharing opportunity than actual system integration.
Okay. Any question on maps? Sir, we'll see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What about, you know, in this age of ever-increasing budget deficit, that we don't maybe talk to Wisconsin and say, you know, maybe we can adapt our program to be similar to yours, or you could adapt to some of our stuff? Because, seriously, you know, I don't know where we're going to get the kind of money that you're talking about. And I think maybe a collaboration like the governor talked about, maybe this is something we could really do. So I would encourage you to look at maybe beyond just information sharing and say, what would it take to make us really maybe go into this together and make it work for both of us?
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if there aren't any other questions on maps, we will turn to the human resource management side of our agency, and I'd like to bring up Assistant Commissioner Judy Plant to talk with you a little bit about some of those issues.
Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Judy Plant, Assistant Commissioner at MMB since August. Not a lot of history. And I have the areas of human resource management and employee insurance. Since I arrived in August, I've been working with folks in those areas to assess how we need to change the way we do business to accommodate the change in both the state's workforce and the likely state workforce of the future. And so we have four areas of concentration, the first and foremost being workforce planning and development, and then some internal process and procedure efforts in redirecting staffing and compensation, simplifying posting and application, and dealing with the employee assistance program. So let me start first with the workforce planning and development efforts. Individual departments have varied in their efforts in terms of workforce planning, and not surprisingly, over many years, a good chunk of our state workforce has been relatively stable. It's been boomers like me who haven't retired out yet. We are facing that change, perhaps not as quickly as we thought, given the market conditions, but we will, in fact, be facing quite a number of boomer retirements. And so We've undertaken as a department a significant workforce planning effort with the agencies. We're in the process of trying to determine what the wisest strategies will be for future workforce planning. And among those, we're looking at retraining efforts. An example of that is looking at our own human resource series of professionals. We haven't been able to attract as many incoming human resource professionals as we would have liked. And so our department has undertaken training in classification to bring up the collective skill set level of entry-level HR professionals. It's an example of sort of internal capacity building that we're trying to do across the state. We're also going to be working on connections with Minnesota education institutions to make sure that we have effective feeder systems. The workforce planning effort will identify those skill areas where we have historically, in recent years, had difficulty in attracting the skill sets that we need to state employment, and we'll try to connect up with the right institutions that have programs that can feed into that to make sure that the up-and-coming grads of the future understand that the state of Minnesota would be a good place for them to seek a career. Obviously, there's the challenge of recruiting the next generation. Much of our systems and communications are geared toward people in my age bracket, and we're on the way out. We need instead to be gearing our communication to a much younger crowd with a little different attention span, and so we need some work in that regard. And again, reiterating the boomer crowd, again, thanks to the market, I think we have a breather for the retirement cliff that we were anticipating, but it will indeed happen as boomers age out of the workforce, and so our efforts there are to be prepared for this. So that's where we're placing some emphasis. On page 28, we're doing some work with our internal staffing and compensation group. As some of you may remember, not too many years back, there was quite a bit larger group. I don't have the exact number. My impression, being from another state agency, was that we had a group of 30 or more who looked at classification issues across the state. That group is now less than 10. There's been no significant change in the way that work is done, and so we have undertaken some significant look at how work is done and how we can best enable agencies to make the decisions that they need to make on classification and compensation issues. And as a result, we'll be looking at more of a role of establishing statewide standards and ensuring those through training and examination. In terms of, we have a duplicate slide there. Let's move on to 30. Simplifying the position posting and application process. This is an effort to simplify the process on both ends for the agencies who seek to post a position, as well as for the applicants trying to access our resume-based system. The application process on the face of it is easy until you compare it to most other online application processes, and ours is considerably less intuitive, and there's a lack of explanatory material. So we're going to be working at, again, using my 23-year-old daughter as our case study. What's the attention span? How quickly does this have to happen? How intuitive does the system need to be? So we'll be looking at that. The existing application resume system that we have has not had quite the maintenance we might want in terms of the information that's contained in it. We have some 9- and 10-year-old resumes that are probably not going to do us a whole lot of good, so we'll be doing some internal cleanup on those things. But again, we're also looking at making the job posting process easier for agencies. Currently, it's been a multi-step process, and we're trying to get that down to a 1- or 2-step process instead. And then the final area, which is actually not in Human Resources, but is located in the Employee Insurance Division, and I'll be bringing Nathan Morocco up to talk about other issues in that area. The final area is employee assistance. In recent years, employee assistance has focused primarily on an outsourced model, which has provided the direct individual assistance that a state employee might request during a time of stress or crisis. And we have had just a few people in-house who have provided the organizational support to a work group where someone is in crisis or where the work group is in crisis. We are looking at the right mix of what should be under contract, what kinds of things should be under contract, if those contracts should be revised, and the right services to provide in-house. So we are seeing an uptick in calls given the ongoing stress of things, and no doubt as the budget issues continue, we'll continue to see an increase in that. So we're paying some attention to that area. So any questions before I introduce Nathan on HR changes?
And again, some of the HR functions, I understand that Minnesota is probably a little bit ahead of what, say, Wisconsin is doing. Is that some area that, you know, we can share some systems or technologies? Or
we'll certainly be talking with them. And, in fact, as I look at our resume-based system, I would like to see what they have to compare notes about capabilities. That might be something that would be helpful to us as well.
Yeah. So. Okay, any questions? Okay.
All right. Then I'd like to introduce Nathan Morocco. He's head of the Employee Insurance Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nathan Morocco, and I'm the director of the Employee Insurance Division. And I'll just cover a couple slides here. A little background on the program, the State Employee Group Insurance Program, which is the program you currently participate in as legislators. It covers 50,000 state employees. We have a total of 120,000 lives, so that includes our dependents as well as some retirees. We are the largest employer group in the state, and we cover all three branches of government, as well as some quasi-state agencies like Historical Society and other groups that have been given permission through the legislature to participate in the program, such as the Affinity Plus Credit Union. We have a $1.5 billion biannual spend. Just a couple things to note there. We have provided the chair and the fiscal staff the spreadsheet on the balances related to that $1.5 billion. Spend. It includes things like everything related to the program activity, including the amount of dollars that that go towards paying the claims, the interest that we receive. Anything that has to do with the program activity is going to be reflected in that spreadsheet, and hopefully you have a copy of that. If you don't, we can certainly get that to you. It will also lay out some specific provisions that have occurred, including some premium holidays that have occurred in the past, some movements of dollars from the CGIP funds into the general funds, and the subsequent penalties, the 14% penalty that we paid to the federal government as a result of that. Going to slide 33 then, just sort of some general features and overviews of the program. Obviously, we're managing the medical and the dental programs, disability, life, long-term care, the pre-tax accounts. As the Assistant Commissioner had mentioned, we also administer the Employee Assistance Program. There's really two components to that. One is the individual consultative services that we provide our members, as well as some consultative services that we provide the agencies themselves to help better manage some of the EAP issues within the agencies. We also offer programs like disease management, medical therapy management. We have our tiered networks, our centers of excellence, where we try to drive our members into those care systems that are providing optimal care for the members. We have programs like Advantage Health Advisor, which is a patient advocacy referral system by where members can call experts and talk to them about diagnoses, alternatives, who might provide the best care, who has the best outcomes. They can even help them with their billing and claims issues. We also have some worksite wellness programs. We have a lot of grassroots efforts that are out there related to health promotion and wellness. Individual agencies are really providing a lot of contribution towards this effort, as well as the agency to build individual worksite wellness initiatives out there at the agencies. We also this year implemented the Benny Card. This is a benefits card, a debit card that's associated with the HRA accounts and the medical dental expense accounts. It allows for immediate adjudication of these pre-tax dollars. It really is beneficial in many ways. It allows members to not have to submit claims on the majority of of the usage of the card. There's no out-of-pocket expense as a result of the use of this card. And it's that immediate adjudication, and so the members really have access to all their dollars immediately that they contribute to their medical dental expense account. And we also coordinate that with the $250 HRA that all members currently have this year as well. And we're also introducing the personal health record, which has been discussed, I believe, in past committees. Okay. With that, I'll answer any questions you may have.
Did you say that we paid a penalty to the federal government by moving CGIP dollars into the general fund?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that's correct. Essentially, there are federal dollars and state dollars, the state dollars comprised of many funds that go towards the premium payments to the CGIP fund. So any dollars that are then moved outside of the fund and used for non-insurance purposes would then incur a penalty of about 14% from the federal government. Essentially, the federal government is giving dollars towards agencies for the purposes of insuring federal employees under the state program. You know, they're not going to want those dollars moved outside of the program that doesn't benefit their members.
So is that something done inadvertently, intentionally? Are we going to do it again, or?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, certainly that would not be my intention. Okay. It would not be my recommendation. You know, we have from time to time taken action on our reserves. We've done some premium holidays. We've done some reductions in premiums. I think that's a more judicious way to balance the program out as opposed to doing any kind of direct transfers, because then really dollar for dollar we're returning the money back to the members, which includes the agency portion as well as the employee portion, back to the members in the same way in which the funds were built up.
Didn't we have a surplus last year? I remember.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure if I would say surplus. Mm-hmm. You know, essentially what we have is a contingency reserve that we tried to hold at an optimal level of 17% of our expected future claims. If those dollars become too low or too high as a percentage of expected claims, then we do take action to try and correct that. And that can either be action that's taken through the bargaining process that we go through with the unions, with the Joint Labor Management Committee, by where perhaps we increase some of our cost-sharing arrangements with employees, or it may be taking action such as doing a premium holiday, which occurred at the end of 2006.
Where are we at the current time as far as these reserves are? Are they high or are they low?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, currently our reserves out for the next 2 years are where we want them to be, which is roughly 17%. We essentially took a three-prong approach on addressing the reserves this year. The first step that we took was to issue the $250 HRA account, and that's an account that all members of CGIP have for this year. That was really sort of our short-term solution. It was really to recognize that our members are making wise consumer decisions when it comes to selecting their health care. By participating in the program, most folks are selecting those care providers that are of high quality, low cost. And our members, I think, are really engaged in the program. We're seeing participation rates in the health assessments upwards of 70%. That's really unheard of in the industry. And so that was really a recognition that our members are engaged in the program, and we needed to there needed to be a reward for that. Our intermediate solution was to then address the current 2009 premium. So what we had bargained was higher than the 3.5% that is currently in place for 2009. So we worked with the unions on creating the appropriate premium increase, which was the 3.5%. Again, recognizing that premium contributions are both employee and employer dollars. So that the reducing of the premium for 2009 then provides a savings back to the agencies as well as to the individual members. Our long-term approach then to the reserve issue was to build into the budgeting process a specific deficit that would bring the reserves in line so that within the 2010-2011 year we would be at the appropriate reserve levels.
Is it possible that I mean, you've listed a number of benefits and other things that's here, but you know, there's all these health clubs and gyms and all over the place. Is it possible that the state could kind of work with some of those organizations and say, well, if you know, a state employee wants to join a fitness club, they can get a discount or a benefit? I think that would be in the interest of the employees, and certainly the health clubs would probably be interested in. Is any discussion happening along those lines?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yeah, certainly the health club discount is something that we look at. We've had conversations with the unions throughout the years about, you know, sort of how we can best leverage the health clubs to manage our health. There's really two approaches to that. One is just general discounts for state employees, and that's something that actually, if you go out to I'm trying to think of the name of that group, there's like an employee club. What's that? Is it Minnesota Benefits? There is sort of an employee club, and we can certainly get you the link, that provides all kinds of discounts for state employees. On that website are some announcements about health club discounts that are provided specifically to state employees. There's also another approach to health club discounts, which are specific incentives to employees to participate in health clubs, and you may have seen some of the billboards out there from Health Partners and Blue Cross Blue Shield. We've worked with the plans considerably on that kind of program. To date, what we can't identify is really a clear return on investment. So what we know is that the cost to implementing a program like that would be about $1 million. What we don't know and what we can't demonstrate, and what the plans have been able to demonstrate to us, is that there is actually a savings. Really, in essence, what you're doing is you're subsidizing people who are already going to the gym. And so there isn't necessarily any claims changes as a result of programs like that. But it's certainly something we continue to work with both the unions and the health plans on, because from the wellness perspective, it's something certainly we believe is important.
Sir Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that Health Partners will give other group insurances like a $20 discount per month for health clubs, but yet not for the state. Is that a negotiated deal, or what's going on with that?
Ms. Morocco?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, essentially that product is for their fully insured program. That means that they are assuming all the risks for those individual participants. The CGIT program is a self-insured program. That means that we pay for all of our own claims, and we pay for all the services that we deem important. So there would be a direct cost for us to implement that program. And the challenge for us in working with the unions is to try and identify the cost savings that may result from a program like that.
Chelsea?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's been talk of, because of our huge budget situation, of maybe expanding the Minnesota Healthcare to other units of local government. Do you guys have any discussions or any thoughts on that, if it was to become like the umbrella insurance for basically all state employees? Or not just state employees, excuse me, but all public employees.
Mr. Rocco?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, we actually have another program within EID that I didn't talk about, which is PEEP, the Public Employee Insurance Program. That's a unit that we operate that all public entities currently have access to. So we're very familiar with working with local units of government, cities, counties, as well as many school districts. And so certainly as part of the K-12 discussions, we have been a part of that, and certainly are more than willing to offer up our services or advice and our experience on the Minnesota Advantage program.
May I follow up?
Yeah,
what would your opinion be? Would that be something, because the pool would be so big, would it moderate the rate or increase the rate or lower the rate? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, that's something I'm not sure that I could comment on, only because I don't know the risk burden that exists out there in the other public entities. There are a lot of complex policy decisions that go along that would need to be answered before I could really address that, such as would it be mandatory, would it be voluntary. Obviously, if you're voluntarily opening up the program, you're going to only get the programs that are hurting the most, which is likely going to overall increase increase the risk burden to the current pool. If you make it mandatory, then obviously if the broader group out there is healthier than we are, maybe it is, maybe it's not. I really don't know. If you go just on age, you know, our average age is about 48, 49 years old, which is higher than the average private employer. What I don't know is what's the average age of a public employee out there. So there's a lot of factors that it would make it challenging for me to address that specifically.
If I may. We did have a bill last couple of years that I carried on a statewide health insurance for schools, and the governor just took a dim view of that proposal. So, but it was mandatory because, you know, if you only made it voluntary, the only the high-risk groups would get in when they need, and then they'd get out. So that you had to do it that way. But anyway, so we'll see.
Thank you. Are you explaining to me, if I'm hearing this right, the PEIP program, that'd be a different pool, though, wouldn't it? Or would it all be in one pool, or wouldn't that be determined if it would ever happen?
Ms. Morocco. Mr. Chair, Senator Alcein, it certainly would depend on how specific, you know, how the program would be developed. But my assumption would be is that it would utilize all of the resources that we have at CGIP, like our contracting authority and our ability to, you know, to manage the programs, but that they would be managed independently, only because we bargain specifically with the state groups on things like plan design and reserves and things like that. And so I don't know that that the rest of the world would necessarily be willing to adopt what the current state employees are bargaining.
Thank you.
Any other questions on CGIP? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think we're going to go to the last piece of the presentation then to go back to some of the IT discussions we've been having and focus again on that enterprise analysis and support role that the department has. The first thing we're going to talk about is IT financing, just to highlight some of the work that we've been doing with OET. You've recently seen a report from OET about IT financing options, and we worked very closely with them to prepare that report to try to start thinking about, for a given system in a given stage of development, a given stage of maturity, what's the appropriate financing mechanism. And so we can make copies of that report to you available, but just wanted to let you know that, again, we work really closely with OET on that, having them obviously be the leads on the policy and standard setting part of the IT agenda, and we help work with them on the financing piece. Assistant Commissioner Showalter is here to give you some specifics on the technology carry forward from the laws of 2007, just an update on what happened with that program.
Yeah, and we are quite interested in that. Of course, that was something that the administration, you know, really wanted to be able to save the money for, you know, to buy new technology and so forth. So, Mr. Showalter, what can you tell us about that?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm pleased to report back on the technology carry forward. We did submit a report on that as of July 15th, 2008, that gave you, I think, a very nice narrative description of all of the projects that were included in that carry forward authority. Just to refresh everyone's memory, in that session, we asked for authority to carry forward any operating funds that agencies might have for IT projects. Part of the logic is this, the use it or lose it mentality that, you know, either you're going to do some quick spending at the end of the year, perhaps buying some things in a not so planful way, or else it cancels back to the general fund. IT is one of those things that's very difficult to do quickly. If you're doing a system, if you're doing an implementation, you can't make the plans for the project, find a vendor, roll that out all in a matter of a couple of months. It takes longer-term investment. However, hopefully there's longer-term benefits. What we found was with the carry-forward language, helped sponsor a number of different specific technology projects, provided some funding for constitutional officers, and then pro rata provided some IT funding for other projects. Some of the largest elements of this carry forward were the budget system replacement project, which I've already mentioned to you, a DNR lands record management system, trying to integrate in a technologically savvy way all of the different types of information that they have on properties that the DNR controls, and then finally continue some progress on the integrated tax system, which the Department of Revenue has certainly talked about with this committee before. Of the $5.7 million that was authorized at that point in time, at this moment, roughly $4.3 million of that has been spent. About $500,000 of the remaining balance is the remaining portion of that budget project that I mentioned earlier. Beyond that, there's some small amounts in various projects that are still being delivered. The dollar figure that I gave you is how much has literally been spent by, you know, writing the check. Certainly encumbrances and plans would get you back up to the $5.7 million figure. We're very pleased, and I think if you look at some of the projects that are listed in the report, you'll find that you got an awful lot of value for some of these projects.
Is there still any, do you have any idea of how much money is still sitting around unspent, sitting out there as carry forward money?
We were just trying to sort of go between the amount that has literally been spent versus how much, you know, is encumbered. Mm-hmm. I will have to come back and get you that specific number. I know that the difference in spending is what I mentioned earlier, but I know from firsthand knowledge the BBS project, and you know, we've signed a contract with a vendor. We're not going to pay them until we are comfortable with the services that they've been delivered appropriately and are comfortable that they have delivered everything that we have expected from them and are not going to pay them until that point in time. So I think some other agencies are probably entering those kinds of negotiations as well.
At some point, you know, if an agency has carry forward money that just sits there for a while, at some point somebody's going to find it.
Mr. Chair, all of us are going to be all over it. We agree.
Yeah. Okay. Please proceed, yeah.
Mr. Chair, if there are no more questions on that, then we'll turn to answering the last issue that you asked us to brief you on. Turning to the statewide systems billing, I'm going to ask Assistant Commissioner Moore to come back up and talk about that. The primary purpose of the statewide systems funds are to fund the operating costs of the statewide systems that we've been talking to you about, the MAP system, which is the statewide accounting and procurement system, as you know, the payroll and benefit system, Semaphore, and then the related information access systems.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The statewide systems billing account is a mechanism whereby individual agencies are billed for part of the operating costs of those statewide systems, and we currently bill the 40 largest users of the systems, and our billing authority by statute is up to $7,520,000 a year, although in recent years we have billed an amount somewhat less than that. We underwent a number of cost reduction efforts as various budget reductions have happened over the years, and we made efforts to reduce our billing to state agencies to help them meet their budget reductions. The allocation of the system costs are, as I said, based on usage. For the MAPS system, it's based on number of transactions, and in the HR payroll system, it is based on the number of employees. And historically, the costs that have been covered by this authority have been mainframe processing, storage, and printing costs at what is now the Office of Enterprise Technology. But in recent years, as technology has changed, we now include the costs of some other platforms. For example, our HR payroll system was moved off of the mainframe and a DB2 database onto architecture using Windows servers and an Oracle database. And it was less expensive to move to that platform, and we have been able to leverage those savings to keep that HR payroll system up to date on a current version and current technology. We've also seen changes in the area of printing, as the Office of Enterprise Technology has recently ended their printing operation, and we have shifted our printing for those statewide systems to print shops at Deed and at Human Services. The statewide systems account was given carry forward authority a few years back, And at the end of fiscal year 08, we carried forward $5.6 million into fiscal year 09. This is planned for use for future upgrades, equipment replacement, current operating costs, and is also our key source of funds for contingency plans for the MAP system. If you recall, a couple of years ago when we came before you, we had requested funding to pay for various strategies in the event we had a significant failure or problem with the MAP system. And we are instead now relying on the accumulated balances in this account. And while we're talking about replacement, keep in mind that we have that even if we started today, replacement would at the earliest would be in July of 2011 or the beginning of fiscal year 12. And our current estimates for the MAPS risk mitigation strategies from the current fiscal year through July of 2011 are in excess of $8 million. I am happy to answer questions.
Are there any questions? Sir Wilbur.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, you were able to carry $5.6 million over into this biennium, but you said the project would cost about $8 million. Is that what I heard?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, not the replacement project. That is the estimate of our various strategies to address problems in the interim until replacement. So if, for example, we have problems with a mainframe operating system upgrade and need to move the old version of MAPS onto a separate mainframe region running an old operating system, that has an expense associated with it of several million dollars. That this money would be used to pay those expenses in the interim until a new MAPS could go live, which at the earliest would be in 2011.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Rowley.
What was the cost of the whole new system again?
The current estimate, Senator, $70 million.
Any other questions? Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair.
And we do have to finish shortly because some of us are on the GovOps committee, which is having a joint meeting with the business committee in just a few minutes. So go ahead.
Since the replacement for the MAP system doesn't sound very feasible, unless you work out a deal with Wisconsin, but is there talk of looking at an outside vendor that you would interface with? And, you know, I don't really know the technical term of it, but that it would be they'd be supplying basically the computer systems to run the programs.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, we've clearly been looking at every option we can. As I think we've hopefully conveyed, the urgency for replacement of the system is pretty high. And so we've been looking at different options. Looking forward to talking with you more once the governor's budget is out. I think that we will be able to have a better conversation about it then, but we are looking at all the options, and we hope that we've been able to find some that will meet all of our needs.
Thanks.
Senator Gemmell.
Just a quick question. Now, are we saving the mainframe and putting it over at the History Center so that some of our children can actually understand what a mainframe is?
They can go to the Department of Revenue and look at stuff that's still being used. So.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I could make one more comment.
Senator, yeah.
One of the things I just wanted to highlight, too, in the statewide systems billing account is that, you know, I understand we also, on the other part of our agency, are busy putting together the governor's budget and understand the temptation to grab every dollar you can. Thanks. I just want to remind you, as you're looking at that one of the reasons you don't see us repeatedly coming forward to ask you for money for upgrades and for operation upgrades and equipment is because we have that statewide systems account and we're able to continue to recycle that money. And so there's a choice there in terms of, apart from even the risk we have with the contingency for the creaky MAP system, we also are able to keep a lot of those things going internally. And so that's one of the reasons why we would continue to encourage that account staying as is.
Well, Sir Roebling.
I was just wondering, have we never bonded for a computer technology, but this map system has been around for a long time. I mean, what is the possibility of doing something like that with a $70 million project?
We're gonna have somebody from whatever the agency is known at some point in the future talking about, you know, what our options are in paying for technology. I mean, sometimes bond counsel gets skittish about what you can and cannot do, and we don't know the options, but we're going to set aside a future meeting to discuss those very issues. Anything further? Well, if not, thank you, and we will see you again at some time in the near future. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you. And for those of us who are...